Welcome and good morning. It is July 26, 2021. You are listening to The Nick Reed Show on KSGF. I'm attorney Kyle Wyatt filling in for Mr. Reed. And we got some news for you before we start our fantastic hour.
And your first alert forecast. Today we have a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Mostly sunny with a high near 90, but feeling like 100. Tonight, mostly clear with a low near 72. Tuesday, sunny and hot with a high near 93. And Wednesday, sunny and hot with a high near 95. Currently in Springfield, it is sunny and 72.
Thank you, Sarah. And as advertised and promised, we have Senator Mike Moon with us this morning. Senator, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, Kyle, I'm doing well. Sounds like you are, too.
Oh, I tell you, you know, I'm not a farmer, okay? And I appreciate what you guys do to wake up so early to start work in the morning. And I was telling Sarah, God bless them for getting up. I wish I could. I wish I had the ability to do it. I guess it's something that you can be trained to do. It's not in my genes. God didn't create me this way. But I appreciate everything you guys do. I imagine your mornings probably start pretty early yourself. Is that right?
Well, sometimes. Some days are late, too. Just the other night, I noticed the animals were on the other side of the fence where they shouldn't have been. And bless my wife, she accompanied me to repair the fence, and we got back about 9:45 or so.
Oh, my.
So some early days, some late nights. So it's just kind of a mix. Whatever it takes, I guess.
Well, you have been serving your constituents for some time now. I know this is your first term as a senator. What's been the big difference you've noticed from serving in the House versus there right now in the Senate?
Well, one of the big things is they can't ignore you. In the House, often you'd stand sometimes for hours and not be called on. But in the Senate, though, eventually you'll be recognized and you can talk as long as you want. So that's probably the biggest thing.
Do you feel that being on the Senate side, you're, I hate to say more effective, but I mean, you're talking about, you know, you're actually having to be listened to. Are we making any progress towards a lot of the things you want to try to get accomplished?
Well, I'd have to say no, not really. And here's the reason why. You look at the Senate in Missouri, we have 34 senators, 10 are Democrats. We have, on the Republican side, of course, there are 24 with the label. But the way it turned out this past session, we had about 6, maybe 7 or 8 of us who would stand on what is in the Missouri Republican platform on conservative principles, and the other Republicans sided with the Democrats. So, I mean, guys, it doesn't take a lot of looking. You can see who the true Republicans are, and if your particular senator didn't vote the way that you think they should have in standing with the Republican platform, then probably ought to be looking for some changes.
So do you find that, obviously, I don't want to ever put you in a bind, but, you know, I've always I've always been, you know, a student of politics, majored in at the University of Missouri. And, you know, there are certain positions in either the House or the Senate that comes with some authority, some power. And on the Senate side, you have the majority leader. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the majority leader can set basically the agenda, can obviously have a big input on committee assignments and whatnot. So isn't there typically a caucus where you guys all get together, the 24 of you, discuss strategy, discuss, you know, whatever it is, the goals that you guys have? I mean, when you're in that private room, does the 6 of you, like, you know, stand up and go, where are you guys?
Well, I should point out, too, there's also the president pro tem, and they're primarily the one who will assign committees, but the majority floor leader and the pro tem will work together on what's coming up and what's not, and the floor leader will kind of direct that. Now, with the caucus, yeah, we have them, and it's oftentimes not even worth going because we're ignored. We have been told certain things. In fact, we considered them promises on this is what's going to happen, and lo and behold, the plan changes. And so we don't have a lot of trust in the current leadership in the Senate. And I've told folks multiple times, you know, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result. And if we don't see some changes in the leadership this coming next session, then we're insane.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, hold on. We got to take our first break of the hour. You are listening to The Nick Reed Show. All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Nick Reed Show. I'm Attorney Kyle Wyatt filling in for Mr. Reed, and we have Senator Mike Moon. Isn't that kind of a nice title? I mean, there's better titles I'm sure you've had, you know, husband, father, but Senator's not too bad, is it?
It's pretty nice. It sure is.
You get a little bit bigger office there in Jefferson City, don't you?
Oh, yeah, much bigger. I think the office compared to the one I had is probably three, maybe four times as big.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty nice.
I'll be playing the Jefferson's theme music when I walk in, you know? I don't know if you caught Friday's show. Nick and I were talking a little bit about you promoting this morning's show. And did you know that Mr. Reed has a crush on your mustache?
No kidding.
Yeah, he says you have a man's stash, and only 1 out of 10 men can you know do it the way you do it. You know, I think a Tom Selleck or Sam Elliott. So well done, you got a big fan there.
Well, I'm flattered. Well, you know, I guess I could just peel it off and hand it to him.
So I got to visit with you a little bit on Thursday. And there was a group of people, I like to call them patriots. I think anytime you get off the couch out of your house and participate in things that have a civic purpose to it, I think you're a patriot if you're standing up for the flag, the Constitution, and God. And I think we had a room full of people at that VFW location. I think we had a lot of patriots there that night, don't you think?
I think we did. And I, you know, when something lights a fire under someone, especially something as important as this, it's really encouraging to see them wanting to do something about it and them learning what they can do. And I'm hopeful that there'll be some successes out of the effort that's being raised here.
We've been talking a little bit about that this morning. Obviously, Mercy is the kind of the big place here locally that's mandating the COVID vaccine for all its employees. Otherwise, there could be some negative consequences, regardless of how much loyal service said employee has given that institution. And you know, we're seeing some states around the country that are initiating legislation to, you know, stop some of the, I call it tyranny. But, you know, as a conservative, we're kind of in a tough place, aren't we? Because we believe in personal liberty. We believe that businesses should be able to do whatever, you know, that business wants to do. But then at the same time, you have employees, you know, Missouri residents, whose livelihoods, and we're not just talking about salaries. A lot of times we're talking about that's their health insurance, you know, that they're able to get through their employer. They may have retirement accounts that they've been building up and building towards where they don't have to work the rest of their lives affecting them. So how do we balance the two? I mean, what role do you think Jefferson City should have, if any, when you have employers like Mercy making these mandates?
Well, you know, I think that there should be, and I believe there is a line between public and private. And, you know, if someone is really private business or individual, they should be able to make decisions for themselves. When, though, you cross that line and you become a recipient of public resources, like many hospitals, I think probably most hospitals take government funding of some sort. I think there's at least a blurred line there where they should not be, they shouldn't have the same abilities to dictate like they used to. For example, I don't think the government should be able to tell an individual, private individual, what they can and can't do with their own private property, as long as it's not violating the law. I came across an article written by a man named Aaron Seary. He's a managing partner of Seary and Glimstad, the civil litigation firm in New York. And he writes about the FDA approval of the emergency use authorization for this particular shot. I try to stay away from using the word vaccine because I don't think it's a vaccine yet, anyway. It's still under just experimental stages. And so I wonder if, since this is still in the experimental phase, if businesses, including hospitals, who require this shot to be received by their employees, are they potentially violating a federal law? Because he talks about in his article that there is a law, and I haven't found it yet, but apparently there is something out there that he's alluding to, and he didn't specify it in the article either. And I wonder, as an attorney yourself, Kyle, are you aware of some provision in law that they might be skirting and potentially violating the rights of these employees?
That's a tough one. We're going to take a break. We'll get back to that after this short break. But this very topic has been argued in federal court just in the last month, I think in June, in the state of Texas. And it was against the Methodist Hospital, where they had issued a similar mandate for its employees. And we'll find that case right after the break. You are listening to The Nick Reed Show. All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Nick Reed Show. I'm attorney Kyle Wyatt, being joined over the phone with Senator Mike Moon. And we were talking about, what is the law state? And Senator, I will tell you that every state has obviously different languages for their employment statutes and laws that are applicable to employments. As most of you know, Missouri is an at-will employment state, meaning that an employer has broad discretion as far as terminating employees. And Missouri has decided that, we're just not going to get involved in that, unless, of course, it violates the law, and especially if it violates, if it was found to be discriminatory, whether it's age, sex, race, and so those are all been enacted by in Jefferson City. There's a case in the state of Texas that was filed against Houston Methodist, where 178 employees were suspended by Houston Methodist for refusing to take the COVID vaccine. And 117 of those 178 signed on to the lawsuit, which argued that requiring workers to receive the COVID-19 vaccine requires the employees to subject themselves to medical experimentation as a prerequisite to feeding their families, likening them to guinea pigs. However, the U.S. District Judge in that case, Judge Lynn Hughes, dismissed their action and ruled that the claims that the vaccines are dangerous are false and is also irrelevant. Judge Hughes noted that Texas law only protects employees for being terminated for refusing to commit an act carrying criminal penalties to the worker, and that receiving a COVID-19 vaccine is not an illegal act. And then Hughes went on. I don't know if you've read any of this, Senator Moon, but the Judge Hughes went on in his ruling that the hospital's requirement does not violate federal law or public policy, and took issue with a lawsuit comparing the requirement to get vaccinated with Nazi medical experiments during the Holocaust. Equating the injection requirement to medical experimentation in concentration camps is reprehensible, Hughes wrote. Nazi doctors conducted medical experiments on victims that caused pain, mutilation, permanent disability, and in many cases, death. In response to the ruling, attorney and conservative activist Jared Woodfill stated that we took the position that it shouldn't be dismissed for a whole host of reasons, and we believe that forcing an individual to participate in a vaccine trial is illegal. So, you know, Senator, as an attorney, and again, my main field of focus is obviously in family law, helping families with children and through their marriages and custody, properties, all that other jazz. But many times we'll see statutes enacted and passed, signed into law by the governor. And a lot of times we don't know, and I think that's probably true with you guys, is sometimes when you pass something, it may sound good in theory or in writing, but then when you actually practice it, it may have a totally different outcome. And you've been in Jefferson City for a while. I assume you've seen a few of those like that. Is that right?
Oh, sure. That does happen because there seems to be the greatest of intent often. And I think most of the time that's true. But we don't see every angle of an intended law until it actually creates a cause of action. So I think you're right. And you brought up the experiments. And I know in the Nuremberg Code, it talks about the voluntary consent of a human is absolutely essential. And I know you could probably argue the experiments that were done during the war to this particular shot, but there are some unintended consequences, or they could have been intentional. I don't know, but anyway, the vaccine apparently is affecting people adversely, and because of that, I believe that we need to take extreme caution in what's happening here, and to require someone to receive this shot, especially when the virus has a 99.7% chance of survival for those who contract it. It just seems to be bizarre to me.
Well, Senator, if you can allow us to hold on, because when we get back, I want to talk about you. You brought up something that was enacted and signed that gave employers basically immunity if something was to happen. Somebody would get affected. I like the listeners to hear more about that and see, well, what happens if you force somebody to get a COVID vaccine and something tragically happens because of that? Is there some sort of protection on that? So when we come back, you are listening to The Nick Reed Show. All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Nick Reed Show on 104.1 KSGF. We are so fortunate to have Senator Mike Moon, and I do mean that, fortunate, because Senator, I speak to a lot of people, obviously in my practice or obviously on the radio, and you are very much appreciated here in the Ozarks, and that sincerely, you are extremely appreciated for what you stand up for and what you do for all of your constituents, and a lot of it, on behalf of us. I mean, we're in Eric Senator Burleson's district here, and that's another great senator that we have. But I just wanted to let you know that your sacrifice, what you do in Jefferson City, is very much appreciated.
Well, I'm grateful to hear that. Thank you, Kyle.
So when I listened to you on Thursday, you were talking about a law that was passed. I think it was signed by Governor Parsons. Is that correct?
It has been signed. Yes.
Okay.
It goes into effect August 28th.
So can you give a brief description of what it is and what it does?
Yeah. In a nutshell, this particular bill, Senate Bill 51, is the one we're discussing, exempts the exposure liability for certain entities, and for others, it requires a fairly high bar to prove the exposure to the virus was intentional or willful or reckless. And what we wanted in this bill, just to preface it, is that we wanted to have no liability exposure for churches and businesses. And the reason, my reason for that was, we're all individuals. And if we're thinking clearly, we should be able to make logical decisions, and we should be required to accept the consequences of our decisions. So if we go into a church, for example, with potential lots of people, we should understand that there is a potential risk of contracting some illness, whether it's the coronavirus or even the common cold. Yeah. And so same thing with a business. And so I believe that individuals, they want to go into those particular spaces, risk that they might contract some illness, then that should be on them. Instead, we allow these liabilities or these causes of action to occur. And I queried a number of attorneys up at the Capitol, what's it going to cost someone just to respond to the suit if they're if something's been filed against them? And they said, well, you know, probably going to range between $25,000 and $50,000. And I thought, my goodness, folks in my area, these small business operators especially, can't afford that. I mean, that would put them under pretty quickly. And another reason to argue that you shouldn't allow these causes of actions to occur anyway. So in any case, Senate Bill 51 was passed, signed by the governor, goes into effect August 28th, and it will provide an opening for persons or others to file a suit based on their assumption that they caught the virus from a church or a business or whatever. Now, it's interesting to me that in this particular bill, it totally exempts from any liability hospitals. I thought, well, that's not good. Those who provide care, those who provide products, whether they manufacture them or distribute them or whatever, they're totally exempt from any liability from the virus. I use the word bizarre probably more than I should, but that's bizarre to me that we would allow that. Now, here's something else that's interesting, and I believe I brought this up during the town hall this past week, and that is that if, let's say that Mercy or Cox or any other hospital in the state terminates employees because they won't submit to getting the shot. What might that impact how might that impact the patients? Well, it could very greatly impact patients who are there for reasons for whatever treatment. And so if a hospital says, well, you know, we couldn't take care of these patients properly and they suffer ill consequences, maybe even die, are they going to be held liable? Mm-hmm. The way I read this bill, they won't be. And I think that's flat out wrong. So, folks, we're in a really difficult spot here where we have had a law passed that I was against mostly from the beginning, but you have chambers of commerce who were supportive of it. Of course, hospitals and their associations were supportive of it for various reasons. And I think this is we're in a dangerous place here because if the scenario that I just mentioned takes place, there are going to be patients who are going to suffer ill consequences as a result of it.
Do you recall what the vote count was in the Senate?
Oh, not exactly. I think there might have been 7 or 8 against it, and the rest were 4. I could probably find that, but I don't remember right offhand.
Well, I'm looking at the bill, you know, and it states that, you know, additionally, no religious organization is defined in the act shall be liable in any COVID-19 exposure act unless the plaintiff can prove intentional misconduct. But that's still a lawsuit, and that's still mm-hmm. something that a church sure. would have to hire an attorney to defend them on, regardless. It's just, so here's my question. How hard would it be for you guys to propose new legislation that any employer that forces or mandates a vaccine and subsequent to that injection, the employee suffers harm, that they should be held liable for that?
Of course, it wouldn't be hard to propose it. Getting that passed is going to be difficult. For example, with started with the religious amendment, religious organizations exemption, and actually that was it passed. But then the next move was to propose a substitute bill, so it took mine right out of it, and we never did get to the business exemption because it was it just wasn't going to pass, and so. And ultimately, it did not. It was passed in its current form by both the House and the Senate. And I believe that you just mentioned very clearly there, even though the bar might be high, it still allows a cause of action to be filed. And it's going to cost people dearly. I think it's going to put people out of business, put businesses out of business in short order.
Well, and how ridiculous is it, though? I mean, isn't that kind of a slippery slope? And then what if we start, you know, allowing people to sue because they contracted pneumonia or they got influenza? And we know people who die from those two viruses. You know, where do we stop in allowing litigation against employers for people just getting sick? It's frustrating. We got to take another break here. If you can hold on just a little bit more, we got some more great things here with Senator Mike Moon. You are listening to The Nick Reed Show. All right. We have Senator Mike Moon with us. We kind of combined our two breaks. I was telling Sarah, I feel like it's rude. I keep cutting you off. It's like, all right, we got to take another break here. And I was like, all right, let's just combine it. Let's have a little bit more time with Senator. I appreciate you, you spending your morning with us. It's really much appreciated. You know, so one of the things that was spoken about Thursday is, you know, there's this feeling of helplessness and I assume you get this as well, speaking to people out there in Lawrence County and others in your district, this feeling of, you know, what is it that we can do? It feels like nobody's listening to us. I don't know if you've heard, you know, St. Louis is reinstituting the mask mandate. The city manager here in Springfield just announced, was it this morning, that it's requiring all its city employees that unless you can produce papers, kind of like what Nazi Germany would require. Isn't it sad? Unless you can produce papers to show that you're fully vaccinated, that you will be forced to put on a mask, which then obviously I think somewhat could ostracize you because if you're wearing a mask, everyone is going to know, well, you never got fully vaccinated. Then Lord knows what kind of harassment you can get from the Karens out there. So there's this feeling of helplessness. I mean, what, you know, outside of words of encouragement, I mean, what are some exact things that we can do to help move, you know, us, the state, our communities in the right direction?
Unfortunately, Kyle, I don't know that I have the silver bullet, but I, as I mentioned to the folks, last week at the town hall, when we look back in history, as I read it, there were about 3% of the colonists who got involved in the fight against Britain to fight for our liberties and freedom. And while it looks like there may not be very many people who are speaking up, there are quite a few. And I just encourage people not to stop, because if we let the minority, as it seems, to be the loud voices, and they seem to always be, then we're going to lose every time. I'm hopeful that these meetings that are taking place and these what now appear to be splinter groups will all come together and be a unified voice. I'm hopeful that the governor will change his opinion, that he will listen, that these city managers and mayors of these various towns who are being tyrants, as I see it, will change their views, and that we'll be able to be a unified voice and win this thing. It's not going to be easy. And, you know, when you go into a building and they're requiring a mask, well, remember, it's your choice. You don't have to patronize those businesses.
Right.
And if enough of these people, enough of us will say, you know what, I'm not going to play your game, and we vote with our dollars and choose to patronize a business that is not acting like a tyrant, I think over time they'll get the message, but it's going to take time, and it's going to take, again, a unified effort and consistency.
Well, it might very well work with businesses, but it doesn't seem like it has much of a difference to city governments. You know, there was only one town really close to us that kind of bucked the system, and that was the city of Republic. You know, they never buckled and required a mask mandate. And I know, me personally, in my family, we prefer to, if we were going to go out to eat, I'd rather go out to eat in a city or town that didn't require me to wear a mask while I'm walking from my table to the bathroom. And then I get to, you know, magically take it off when I'm sitting at the table. I'm no longer, you know, affecting anybody.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like city politicians care about that.
Yeah. Well, again, it goes back to paying attention. When these times are occurring now, when it's time to vote for somebody, you got to remember that. And unfortunately, you know, it just seems to be human nature. When we're in the heat of something, we're in the fight, and then the election may be a year or two away, and we all of a sudden forget. And, we recognize that name, and we check it off, and we make the same mistake over and over. The other mistake we make is not knowing who we're electing. If they don't have a voting record, you got to get to know them. You got to ask their opinions on different things and find out what they believe. If they snooker us and win election, then turncoat during their time in office, then we got to remember that and unelect them next time. We've got to be vigilant in this. So, again, it's not going to be easy. And it could take a little time before their election time comes up. We don't have recalls typically in most elected offices in Missouri. So we got to play it the waiting game and be patient.
During your time in the House and now in the Senate, you know, you brought up something that you'll have a member that has an R next to their name, but that their voting record may not always reflect it. I mean, is this where we have what we call like rhinos, like, you know, Republican in name only? I mean, is that really that prevalent there in Jefferson City?
Oh, I believe it is. I mentioned whether it was Thursday night or whenever in the House, we have about 117 Republican representatives. Rest are Democrats, of course. And you'll often find that there might be 85 to 90 Republicans who actually stand firm on Republican principles.
Good.
In the Senate, we've got 34 total, 10 are obviously Democrats. We might have 7 or 8 who consistently stand on Republican principles in the Senate. So, folks, you can go to the website. It's easier to look at house.mo.gov a lot of times and find the bills. You can find right in the center of the page. Looking up legislation, it's okay. You can do the same thing on the Senate side. It's just a little bit more searching for what you need. But you can pull up these bills, and it's relatively easy to find the votes on each bill. If you need help, give me a holler. I'll give you my phone number right now if you want to give me a call. Or you can email me at mikemoon4missouri.com or mike.moon@senate.mo.gov. My phone number, though, is 417-818-5419. I'd be happy to talk to you through these things because you need to get involved and you need to pay attention to what we're doing. And I'm going to tell you right off the bat, I'm not perfect. I've made lots of mistakes, and I'll likely make mistakes in the future. I need to be held accountable just like everybody else. And so I encourage you to get involved, pay attention. You don't have to eat, sleep, and breathe it like I do or Kyle does, but you need to pay enough attention so that when we do make mistakes, you let us know. And hopefully we'll listen to you and not make the same mistake twice.
You brought up a good thing as far as a call to action is, you know, we have groups, you know, the Missouri Republican Assembly. I assume you've seen them a few times up there in Jefferson City.
The which one?
The MRAs.
Oh, yeah, the Missouri Republican Assembly, yeah. Yeah, they're a good bunch.
Too. Yeah, but you were talking about, you know, that, you know, come up to Jefferson City, and you don't have to come every week, or I think there's some that may come every day, but, you know, and come find your representative or senator, or even, you know, speak to others and let them know what you think. Because, I mean, that does have a lot of power to it. Is that, I mean, is that the feeling that you get?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. And I know for a lot of us, working other jobs, it's difficult just to pick up and go up to the Capitol. I mean, it's a, you know, 2 to 3 hour drive, depending upon where you are and in this area. And it can be a little bit of a hiccup in your week. But when you see someone from your district, someone you know, and see them on a regular basis, it makes a difference for me, because it shows me they care and they're actually sacrificing, because I get paid to be there. Most others, they're doing it on their own dime. And so I think it's a good testament on behalf of those who are taking time out of their week to come up and share their opinions. And so I believe it does make a difference for me.
Well, Mike, Senator, sorry. I really do appreciate. Well, no, you're in that title, and by God, that's a good title to have, Senator.
Well, I like Mike too.
I do appreciate you giving us some of your morning today, and we look forward to seeing you here in the future.